Welcome to McClanahan Academy's United States History 2-1865. This is going to be a great course. I'm really happy to have you on board with it. We've got a lot of material to cover, and we're going to start with a presentation that I think really sets the stage for everything we're going to do, and we're going to talk about the nature and meaning of history. This is a presentation I often give to my first semester college students. And so if you're a first semester college student, if you're a high school student, if you're a lifelong learner, whoever you are, this presentation is designed to get you interested in history, to get you interested in the historical profession, and to explain what history is through a series of quotations and a discussion, and why we study it, and also talk about the historian's craft. These are things that I think are necessary as a foundation, the building blocks for what we're going to do for the rest of our time together in this particular course or any course at McClanahan Academy. But if we don't understand what history is and why we study it, I think we're searching in the dark without the light on. And so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But I think you're going to find this particular presentation enlightening. And of course, we're going to have some other material to deal with this in the course. But again, this really sets the stage for what we're going to do in the rest of our time together in this particular course. So let's get started. First and foremost, when we look at history, we have to ask a fundamental question. Is the study of history a social science? Now, if you go to a university or maybe in your high school curriculum or college curriculum, it doesn't really matter where you are. History is often lumped in with the social sciences. And by the social sciences, we're talking about psychology, sociology, political science, which is now considered a social science. But more importantly, those two courses of psychology and sociology. History is often related to those things. So it's often described as a science. And that's because the premise of that is that history is like any other scientific field. You have a hypothesis, and then you use material to validate or refute that particular hypothesis. And this is simply just not the way history works. Now, some people do history that way. For example, the Marxists do history that way. A Marxist will say, okay, all history is class conflict, and we're going to find material to prove that. All history, and then you can look at it as a cultural Marxist, all history is racial conflict, and we're going to find material to prove that. The progressives use this quite a bit in their economic determinism. So essentially what you have with the social science belief that history is a social science is that we have a hypothesis, a question or a belief, and then we're going to find all the information we can to either confirm that belief or refute that belief. Well, that's not the way history is supposed to work. History is the remembered past. And I'm going to have a quotation to that effect later on in this presentation. But when we look at history and we look at what we do with history, everything that we do in life can be part of history. And this is why history really is the grandfather of all subjects. If you take biology, if you take an introductory biology course, essentially what you're learning is the history of biology. You're learning the material that's already been done and established. You're not making any new discoveries. You're not finding any new theories. You're simply looking at the material that can be proved, and you're proving it. Now, you're learning how to do scientific experiments and things of that nature, but essentially you're learning things that have already been proved over and over again, and so you're learning the history of those particular experiments and those particular findings. The same thing in math. When you study mathematics, you're learning equations that have already been proved and found to be valid. So you're learning things, you're not creating any new mathematical theories, you're not coming up with any new equations. You're learning things that have already been established in Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, Algebra 3 course. It's only when you get into advanced mathematics that you're actually doing anything beyond that. Same thing with science. If you're taking a literature course, you're learning the history of literature. Now you're reading the literature and you're being exposed to it, but you're going to learn the history of that literature. Same thing in philosophy, art, music, politics. Even political science, when you get into the theory, you're learning the history of various political ideologies. So that's history. All of these things factor into history. And so the historian's job, and you could maybe make a case, and I had my roommate in graduate school who took a philosophy minor field, One of the questions that was posed to him as in his comprehensive examinations was, is philosophy or history more important? So you can make a case that maybe philosophy is more important, history as a philosophy. But certainly anything we can study, any particular aspect of humanity can fall under the umbrella of history. So in this particular course, we can talk about art, we can talk about music and literature, and we will. We can talk about politics and religion and philosophy and war and economics, all the traditions, cultural traditions, all of that stuff is fair game. All of those things fall under the umbrella of history. And this is why history can be the most complex and most difficult course you can take. Because if I go into an art class, I'm going to study art. I'm going to talk about the history that goes around that period, but generally I'm going to study art. If I go into music, same thing. Go into literature, same thing. Go into science. But in history, I can talk about all of these things. And that's what actually makes the course the most enriching course you will ever have in your life. If you have a real history course, a history course that gets into the study of man at the time that you're addressing man, or the place that you're addressing man, then you're going to have a comprehensive course that does more than any other course can for a full understanding of what man has done and thus what man is. And again, that's another quote that we're going to get into in a little bit. Now, how do we write history? This is something, as a historian, you have an obligation to tell the story. And it doesn't matter whether you're paid to do so, whether it's your full-time job. I have a full-time job teaching history. I also do this. So you've paid for this course. So you're paying me to give you this course. Whether you're paid to do so, or whether you are your family historian, you do genealogy, or you have an obligation to tell your kids about history. It used to be that a mother's primary role was imparting the history of her people to her children on her knee. So this was something that people did, and we're going to look at a quote that addresses that too. But you have to have three essential things to be a good historian when you write history. Number one, you have to have an imagination. These things don't exist in a vacuum, the things that happen. You have to be able to imagine these things as you would if you were writing literature, a fictional story. The same thing is true in history. You have to imagine the place, the feel. You have to put people there. Shelby Foote used to implore historians to learn how to write, because if you can't write, you can't tell the story. And people don't want to read just dry, this is what happened, this is the date it happened. People get tired of that. They want to read something that's got a little excitement to it. And so history requires imagination. It also requires beauty. Man, humanity is beautiful. It's also violent and savage and destructive. But man, at his core, is creative and beautiful. And it requires you to understand that. So I hope in this particular course, you're going to see both sides of this. You're going to see the beauty of humanity. You're going to see the violence of humanity. I often say that history, if you don't study history, it's like you wander around in the dark without the light on. And that as you start to study history, you flick the light switch on. And then you start to realize, you start to be able to navigate your environment better. If one thing you can say is to, why we study history, is to be able to navigate your world better. You're not always going to be able to make the right decisions, even if you know historical antecedents that might say, don't do that or do this. Human beings tend to do similar things in similar situations. So it's hard to break free from from human nature, how you're programmed to do things. But certainly, turning the light on is going to help you navigate things better, and you're going to see the beauty of things. It also requires some detail. You can't do history if you don't have detail. So you need that as you're going through this course. You need to remember that. We're going to go into some detail on some things that are important. It's important to remember these things. History, we have this conflict now in the historical profession. What do students really need to know? It used to be it was a catechism. You learned dates, names, and it was rote memory. You learned these things. You memorized them. This is what you did. And then there was a backlash to that. We don't want people to do that. We want people to learn themes and ideas and custom, just big picture things. The problem with that is that students can't anchor them anywhere. And so I have a colleague who said that he gave a question and the students answered essentially in platitudes. Well, that's because that's what they're taught. They're taught platitudes from the time they're five until they're through high school. And if you just do big picture themes, this is all you're going to get. They weren't wrong for saying what they said. It was something about religious toleration. And the students responded, religious toleration is important because we need to respect all people. We don't want to discriminate. These are the things that we're taught in history now. Aren't the founders great because they had religious toleration? Or, you know, if you look at the First Amendment or state constitutions. So these are things that they're taught, but there's no anchor. There's no historical context to that. And if you don't have the context with the names and the dates, well, all that stuff just becomes platitudes, just becomes slogans. And that's okay if you're trying to indoctrinate people. And that's essentially what education has become, indoctrination. So history works well for that. But you lose the nuance and the context, which is the important part of why we study it. Now, what are the essential tools for the historian? Well, you need primary and secondary materials. Primary sources would be things like letters from a time period, newspapers, or any kind of written document from the time period can be a primary document. The best, of course, are things that come from that individual if you're talking about main actors in a historical event. So if it's a military engagement, you want the reports, you want the people that were involved in it writing letters and getting to see what they said about things, maybe an eyewitness account for what happened there. So those written documents are great, but you can also have other things. In the modern age, you have video. You have tremendous amount of video, hours and hours of video. You have the visual arts, you have paintings, you have photographs, you have anything that can give you a clue as to what the place or event looked like. And so that's important when putting it in your mind's eye, when you have this imagination, you have to have those things to write a good story and tell the story the way it was intended to be told and how it actually happened. Artifacts, physical objects from a period. These are great when it comes to learning history. And anytime you get to hold an artifact in your hand, I mean, it really is, it's a connection with the past, it's a connection with people. And I think that's also something that you have to have. You have to feel this connection with the past, with the people that came before us. And that's what history does. You have that connection to these people and these events and these places. There's nothing like walking where these, I mean, you feel like, wow, I'm walking where so-and-so walked. I'm standing where this person stood. You have that physical then, that tangible connection with the past. And that's an important thing to have too with the subject material. And then of course, oral traditions. What did people say about these things? One of the most famous of all oral traditions is Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey. These are oral traditions that were passed down. We know that some of it's probably far-fetched, but we know some of it actually happened. So anytime you have oral traditions, that's an important part, too, of understanding history. So you have all of these things put together into a great big stew, and that creates the story of a people and a place. And this is what the historian does. You have to tell the story. It's not about indoctrination. It's not about persuading people that your way is the right way. Your theory of history is the right way. History is not a theory. History is never a theory. If you look at history as theories, well, then you've already gotten off track because you're considering it to be a social science. History is what the people said it is. And so the other problem with theory is that we look at things through presentism, it's called. We're gonna evaluate the past by the present. And that becomes very, very dangerous because it opens the door to the social science approach to history. So I hope that by saying all these things, you understand what we're going to do in this course and you get a good feel for it, because now I'm going to show you some quotations about what is history and why we study it. And these are historians, famous individuals, and what they said about the particular subject. So what is history? Big question. What is it? I often ask my class, and I say there's no wrong answer to this. This is just what you think it is. And of course, for yourself, as you're sitting here watching this class, maybe take a minute or two and think about how you define history, what you think history is. And I'm going to read off several quotations from, again, famous people, historians themselves, how they define history. And maybe your definition of history equals theirs. Again, there's really no wrong answer here. It's whatever you conceive of history to be. I think there's better definitions than others. But certainly, there are many definitions for this particular topic. So let's start with the first, and I think the best. History is the memory of mankind. This is John Lukacs, who just died recently. He's in his 90s. But he was a very famous historian, a philosopher of history more than anything else. But I think this particular quotation brings home what history actually is. It's the memory of mankind. And I often use this analogy, and it's something you've heard before. If a tree falls in a forest and no one's around to hear it, does it still make a sound? Well, we know it still made a sound because we know when trees fall, they make a sound, but we can't tell what kind of sound it made. We don't know exactly when it fell if you just come across a tree that fell in the forest. You don't know how long ago it fell. You don't know any of that stuff. I mean, you can kind of figure out through maybe scientific means, decay and other things, how long that tree has been there. But if you've never, if nobody's ever been through here before, you're in new ground, well, you know a tree fell. You know there was a tree, it fell, but you don't know much else about it. So that part of that history of that tree is lost to memory. But if we remember things, then we can say, oh yeah, this tree was here at this time, it fell at this time. So we have a memory of those two particular events, and so we can put those things together. The same thing with people. There have been billions of people that lived on this earth that we don't know anything about. We know they were here, but we don't know anything about them, so they're not remembered. You have to be remembered to be included in the history. And this, and people are aware of this, but I say this to people for their own family. If you have an elderly grandparent or parent, if you have somebody in your family that's getting up there in age, have them go record them. Tell their stories. They loved it. Older people like to tell stories about the way things were and what they used to do. Go listen to their stories and record those things, because if you don't, that memory is gone. It's gone. So you want to be able to have that memory. And this is, you know, genealogy. It doesn't matter if you did anything great in your life. It's just these are the people you've come from. So you should have that memory of those people. So history is the memory of mankind, I think, is one of the best definitions we can have. History is indeed little more than the register of the crimes, follies, and misfortunes of mankind. This is Edward Gibbon, who was an 18th century British historian, wrote a history of the Roman Empire. This is a negative way, a pessimistic way of looking at history, but it's often true. This is the things that people focus on, the crimes, follies, and misfortunes of mankind. Same thing with the news. I mean, you go out and you see all the bad things on the news. This is what people are attracted to. We're not attracted to the ordinary. We're attracted to the sensational, because the sensational is odd. It's not people going out to work and doing what they do, though there are people that like to write about those things. We want to talk about the sensational. And so I think one of the things that people don't like about history is when it becomes too cynical, though. They want to hear about great people. They want to hear about great things. They don't want to hear about all the bad stuff all the time. They want to hear what this individual did that was great, not just a negative, a crime, a folly, or a misfortune. So this is where Gibbon, and I think a lot of historians think we need to talk about the bad stuff so we don't do those things again. But what's lost in all that is the good stuff that you do need to do again. I mean, if we're going to talk about John Smith, for example, let's talk about the heroic things that John Smith did that make him extraordinary. Let's talk about the founding generation for the extraordinary things they did, not just all the bad things they did. We all know these people are people, so they're going to have faults and failings, but the extraordinary things they did is what made them great. So let's talk about that too, and make sure that we emphasize that, because people need that. They need those things. If all you're doing is talking about negative, 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 well, you're never going to have a situation that people like history. History is a witness that testifies to the passing of time. It illuminates reality, vitalizes memory, provides guidance in daily life, and brings us tidings of antiquity. Hello from the past. So Cicero, who lived over 2,000 years ago, is still talking to us today because we're reading this quote. Tidings of antiquity. Hello from the past. If you want to be remembered, if you want to be immortal in this life, then you need to be remembered. We still can talk to George Washington, though he can't talk back to us. We can still talk to Cicero, though he can't talk back to us, unless it's already the things that he's done. We can have a conversation with these people. It's one-sided now, but we can have a conversation with these people because of their writings, because they are remembered. And that conversation, it can be, as you read these things, it can be a fulfilling conversation. You can learn a lot. They can't hear you back. You can hear their writings, and there's no real time conversation, but it is an important conversation. Vitalizes memory, illuminates reality, provides guidance in daily life. I mean, this is a great quote. I love this quote from Cicero because it really gets to the heart again of what history can do for a people. Now, why do we study history? It's another big question. Again, I ask my students this question. A lot of times you get, because it's required, right? We study history because I have to take it. I'm told I have to take a history. And that's because I think people, again, get very cynical about history. They get coach. They get the football coach. They get the baseball coach, the basketball coach in their public high school curriculum. And that coach doesn't really care about history. He cares about what's going on the football field or the baseball diamond or the basketball court. Or the soccer field, whatever it is. Now, there are very good coach teachers out there. This is not to disparage people. But a lot of times you have people that, because history is one of those areas that a lot of people that end up coaching take, and they just have a teaching certificate so they can go coach, we have a lack of enthusiasm for the subject. And that's problematic. So a lot of people go through history and they just don't really care. They don't see how it applies to them. They don't really care about all these things unless it's to be used as a weapon against somebody else. And so you can weaponize history without question. That's a dangerous thing to do, but you can do it. And this is one of the reasons why people would say we study history, because we want to have a weapon against our political opponents. We can make them look bad by our views on history. But I think there's other reasons to study it, and let's talk about some of those. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and what never will be. Thomas Jefferson. I love this quote. There's so much meat here. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free, if you expect to be both in a state of civilization, which is what we live in, you're expecting something that's never been there and will never be there. You can be free and ignorant if you're in the state of nature. That's what Jefferson, if you're living out in the woods, like, by yourself, you can be free. You can be dumb as a rock. All you have to do is be able to provide for yourself, get food, and survive. You can be free. You can be ignorant about anything else, and you're free. But once you get to a state of civilization where you have complex political, social, and economic interactions, if you don't have knowledge, if you don't have historical knowledge, you are going to be made a slave by someone or something. You need that knowledge. Knowledge is power. That's the phrase, the old cliche. Knowledge is power. It is power. Being able to maintain your independence and know that freedom is difficult, and that to have that in a state of civilization requires a tremendous amount of learning. It's an important thing. But Jefferson's saying, look, if you want to be free and ignorant and you live in civilization, you're never going to have it. You can't. And it's true. You can't. So I love this quote because it gets to the heart of what really is at issue here when you start talking about history and why it's important. It's important so that you can have the knowledge not to be made a slave by a bank or a government or anything. I mean, if you have this type of knowledge, you're going to be able to navigate freedom in your life. And I think that's what, Jefferson is saying here. Since history has no properly scientific value, its only purpose is educative. And if historians neglect to educate the public, if they fail to interest it intelligently in the past, then all their historical learning is valueless except insofar as it educates themselves, G.M. Trevelyan. So what Trevelyan is saying here is something I alluded to earlier in this presentation. You have an obligation as a historian, whether you're an amateur historian, professional historian, to tell people the story. And if you don't, yes, you're enriching your own life, and that's important. You're becoming a good citizen. You're doing all the things that are important. But if you don't tell people about it, well, your education is valueless except insofar as it educates yourself. So if you know something, if you take this course, share the material with your friends, your family. Do those things because this is how you spread the word. You become the go-to person for these things and you start, people listen. I mean, you start planting the seeds for these very important things we're going to talk about in this particular course. To each eye, perhaps the outlines of a great civilization present a different picture. The wide ocean upon which we venture, the possible ways and directions are many. And the same studies which have served for my work might easily, in other hands, not only receive a wholly different treatment and application, but lead to essentially different conclusions. Jacob Burckhardt, who was a 19th century historian, wrote a lot on the Renaissance. But essentially, he's recognizing that all history is biased. This class is biased. I mean, you're taking it, you know it's biased because you know who I am. This class is going to be biased. All historians are biased. To say that there's a non-biased historian is to tell a lie. The mere material they pick to write about. I mean, if you're writing about, say, the civil rights movement, well, that's something that's interesting to you for some reason, and that bias is going to come out. If you pick to write about the Constitution, well, I mean, you're going to be biased about it one way or another. Same thing with any field in history. Burkhardt was just saying, look, I know this. I'm dependent on my sources. If my sources are biased, I'm going to be biased. You can't help it. I often, give students an exercise in this. Tell me something good about Hitler, for example. And people come up with all kinds of things. And then we can all say the bad things about Hitler. But students try very hard to come up with good things about Hitler. On the other hand, if I say, tell me something bad about Abraham Lincoln, it's blank stares. Blank stares. Because they're not taught anything bad about Abraham Lincoln. Now, I mean, that's okay in that I talked about, the heroic things of people. We don't always just want to tear people down. But the history of Abraham Lincoln is not objective. It's all biased. It's all written primarily by people that love Abraham Lincoln. So you're going to get this very rosy picture of Abraham Lincoln, even though we know all that's not true. And you find that a lot in American history, in all history. You have people that are held up as being infallible people when we know there's lots of faults, and people that are just characterized as scum of the earth when maybe there's something redemptive about them. You don't know. The study of history is the best medicine for a sick mind, for in history you have a record of the infinite variety of human experience plainly set out for all to see, and in that record you can find yourself and your country both examples and warnings. Find things to take as models, base things rotten through and through to avoid. So this is, again, Livy, who was one of the early Roman historians, was interested in what history could do for the Roman people. This is what Augustus was also interested in. And this is what generally people say. Well, we got to know what mistakes to avoid and what things to do, right? If we have things that are right. The question is, that's all subjective. I mean, how do you measure that? How do you measure what's good and what's bad? How do you measure what's right and what's wrong? I do agree with Livy that the study of history is the best medicine for a sick mind. I mean, without question, if your mind is sick, you should read some history. It'll help you get better. But again, we're going to have biased history no matter what you do with this particular position. The value of history is that it teaches us what man has done and thus what man is. I mentioned this earlier in the presentation. I think this is an important quote. You are what you have done, you personally. Also, humanity is what man has done. So man is all of the things. We could come up with great adjectives and negative adjectives, and man is all those things. Because we know man has done all those things. So it doesn't matter where you're talking about, what time period, what people. We know man has done what man is. What man has done is, and thus what man is. We know that's what history is. And finally, the study of history, there's two more. The study of history is not to make us clever for next time, but to make us wiser forever. Lord Acton, a great British philosopher, loved Robert E. Lee. But it's not to make us clever for next time, not just to make one decision better, but to make us wiser forever. We have to be smarter in every decision we make. And if we do that, will be advancing, right? That's the idea. And then finally, life is not simple, and therefore history, which is past life, is not simple. This is true. Again, history is a complex subject, the most difficult subject you could take in college, I think, in many ways. Maybe if you're an engineering major or something, you're taking all these advanced mathematics, but certainly history can be one that you could talk about engineering in a way. And I know Auburn University does it. They have a history of technology. All of this stuff is complex. You need to get in the mind frame that we're going to talk about a lot of things that are complex. I'm going to throw a lot of material at you, and you need to get it. Now, of course, the beautiful thing is that you have this course, and you've purchased it once, and now you've got it forever, so you can go back and watch it over and over again. But we need to understand that because history is not simple, it can create stress for people because they think they can't get it. But knowing that, knowing the complexity is what makes the whole process beautiful. So I hope you enjoyed this presentation 1 of United States History at 1865. I'll see you next time for presentation 2.